We're here with Emma Goodford from Knight Frank discussing their latest M25 report.
There's been a lack of office space, new office space coming to the market, but demand is still there. What's kind of 2018 holding for the M25?
It's a very good question. What has been interesting is that the wave of speculative development that we saw across the southeast basically completed towards the tail end of last year, 2017, and about 3.3 million square foot was delivered into the market. There is still about 800,000 square foot of space that is due to complete by the middle of this year. But really interestingly, only three schemes have started in the last 6 months. One is a new development in Maidenhead, and two are substantial refurbishments. So stock levels, supply of stock coming into the market is very low. And the impact of that is that from the middle of this year, mid-2018, we'll see a peak in terms of vacancy, particularly in the M4 corridor in the Thames Valley, the Crossrail corridor, if you like, and then vacancy will start to decline. And I think the significance of that for occupiers is twofold. Choice will begin to diminish, and because demand in the last 12 months has become more polarised to the smaller end of the market, landlords with bigger buildings have decided, I think very prudently, to make the decision and split their buildings in many cases. So you've got a sort of almost a perfect storm, reducing availability, demand remaining actually fairly constant, more landlords splitting buildings, accommodating those smaller requirements, and therefore the bigger requirements that we think will emerge this year, and we think we'll probably see between 8 and 10 big requirements, will have less choice.
Okay, and in terms of obviously landlords looking at splitting up their floor plates to attract, you know, the smaller end of the market, is that, but you know, obviously we've got the co-working trend and the service office, you know, on the back of WeWork and TOG, is that kind of a trend you see continuing? Is that kind of the bit of the market where, you know, landlords and investors need to be looking?
It's an interesting point. I have worked in the southeast and the M25 market for 30 years, and in that time there have been three significant cycles, I suppose. The most recent, of course, linked to the global financial crash. After each of those cycles, the market has sort of gone back to where it was. So it's dipped and then it's recovered, and the trend has sort of continued unchanged. What we are seeing now is a structural change in how occupier demand is behaving. So we are seeing it not only reducing in the amount of space that companies are taking, and that's because, frankly, they are adapting to with technology to new ways of working, but and honing as a result the amount of space they need. So a company that might have wanted 100,000 square feet maybe decides it wants 70, and then maybe decides that of that 70, perhaps 20% could be accommodated in a co-working type environment or a flexible office type environment. And so the core space take reduces from what was 100 to 50. Well, replicate that across the market and it has a very significant impact. So you know, businesses is much more, it's become much more astute at what it actually needs, what its demands are. And that largely reflects its younger workforce, coupled with the fact that technology is supporting how that younger workforce will be working and behaving going forward. So yes, I think we are in an environment where we will continue to see a growing number of smaller chunks of space being acquired and a more limited number of very big requirements out in the market actively being satisfied. Many of the really big requirements, and by that I mean over 100,000 square feet, I personally think will pre-let, because their demand will become so bespoke that actually a spec developed building may have to be so adapted to suit their requirements that actually it's easier for them probably to take something from plan. And the thinking on that sort of strategy is probably 5 years from when they actually need it, although 5 years in a corporate life cycle is actually quite a long period of time.
Okay, and obviously you said a lot of occupier demand is being driven by lease events. And how do landlords, particularly say those in maybe not the most attractive M25 areas, those not with Crossrail, which is really what it's down to, how do they entice occupiers to their buildings? Because obviously it is all about service, and if you're a landlord that hasn't been providing that service, how do you then kind of get on
I suppose the simple answer to that is you have to provide that service. You know, the property decision is now way more than just bricks and mortar. But I think it is bigger than the individual building. And this, I think, is where local authorities really need to think about things. You know, sense of place is about place. Some of that place can be created inside the property. But if the property fundamentally is sitting in a place that is not particularly attractive, then the occupier inevitably sees that, and they see it principally because that place is not attracting people to live, particularly younger workforce to live, and therefore, you know, that coupled perhaps with the older building stock is if you like a double whammy. So I think in the southeast you'll see places, for example, like Brighton, you know, very vibrant, creative scene, drawing on graduates from the university facilities down there. Very big in technology and new wave technology in particular. That, you know, that is a market that's responding very well. The sense of place in Brighton has really improved. You know, you think of it as a tawdry seaside town. It is not that anymore. If you look, for example, at Croydon, you know, Croydon has a huge percentage of stock that's much more, significantly more than 15 years old. These were buildings built in the 60s and 70s, maybe housing government departments, let on 35-year leases. These are really old buildings. But Croydon has really sort of tried to address its sense of built environment. And then if you drop a terrific building into Croydon, if you can, into a really vibrant and exciting place to be, that would be a very good place to put your business. Coupled with that, diversity, trains, trams, London catchment, you know, and you've got a really good place. Reading, which actually I didn't mention very much this morning, but you know, Reading is a really interesting place. Nearly £1 billion spent on the way in which the station was redeveloped. A good in-town market, a great out-of-town market, lots of choice for occupiers. But again, a very exciting residential development scene. And as a result, lots of young people are living there, and it's got a great university. So, you know, it's got this layering of things that business need to make a decision about where they go and where they put their business.
Okay, and in terms of amenity within buildings, I mean, do you think landlords, you know, investors, developers, they need to look at either developing their own offering or do they kind of get in the likes of WeWork? I mean, obviously WeWork and TOG are not really out in the southeast. It is still kind of Regus.
It's London. I mean, WeWork obviously have been very dominant in Hammersmith, which we consider to be sort of the inner reaches of the Thames Valley. But yes, you're right. I think WeWork are very much a London-based and greater London and periphery to London-based entity. I think that's really for the landlord to consider. What we've seen at the moment is that the offer has come predominantly through people like WorkLife, Central Working, Auriga to a lesser degree, Spaces, the newer concept, the sort of co-work concept of Regus, and they have been enormous in terms of the expansion trail, whether that's because they see the opportunity or whether they're looking to sell the business, who knows. But I think you know, landlords have an opportunity here now of either stepping into the shoes of that provider or frankly transacting in some way, conventional lease, management agreement, turnover arrangement, with one of the specialist providers. And bear in mind, those providers have now got years in some cases of experience of providing the customer facing service that is demanded by people occupying those spaces. And you know, that's something that landlords, you know, need to build. There's data, of course, that they can secure, but they've got to build a catalogue of data. They've got to work out how they provide that service if they're going to do it directly. And you can see the London landlords doing it. BL are doing it, Land Securities are doing it. Some of the big London landlords are doing it, where they've got a portfolio in the core that they can roll that out to. I suspect in the regions we will see more provision by the third-party operators than landlords doing it themselves, simply because the portfolios are more diffuse. The one place I think that will differ is business parks. And business parks have a unique opportunity because they are self-contained and very often in more limited ownership or single ownership in quite a lot of cases. You know, they are really well placed to create an amazing environment and to create a direct offer in terms of the sort of co-work serviced offer that the tenants are demanding in buildings themselves.
Okay, and just kind of on the investment side, obviously there's not a lot of stock on the market, there's not a lot of new stock being built. I mean, if you're someone who's looking to invest in the southeast, as yields are better than they are in central London at the moment, I mean, what would your advice be? I mean, where would you kind of look or what at the moment?
I think it's an incredibly challenging question, and challenging because of the market. Because inevitably, if you're sitting in a town where you think there's going to be future growth potential, why sell now? Why not capture that growth in terms of, you know, providing the offer that the tenant wants? There have been a number of transactions that have been very lumpy in the market. You know, particularly if you look at people like Frasers Property, who've come into the market in the last 12 months, spent more than half a billion pounds on several large assets. You know, that's not where the institutional funds are. The institutional funds want to spend somewhere between 20 and 60 million pounds. I think we will see some churn in some of these markets, and I think some of these markets provide what I would consider now are fantastic opportunities to maybe go up the risk curve a bit and perhaps think about the opportunity of forward funding, spec development in certain places. But fundamentally, I mean, different investors will be at different points of their, you know, investment journey, and stock will emerge, funds will be coming to the end, they'll be broken up, and that will release assets either in a portfolio or in individual assets. So, you know, inevitably markets will generate opportunity. But I think those towns that we would consider to be, you know, the better centres, I think there is likely to be there's likely to be interest in retention, revamp, if you like, repositioning and generating that value themselves than maybe selling on and letting somebody else capture that value that they could have received had they taken the plunge and spent the money that might be needed to bring the building up.
Okay, and just lastly, you've mentioned Brighton, you've mentioned Croydon. Mm. Where else do you see kind of potential this year in terms of the occupiers, landlords, and councils to kind of get in and kind of up their game and, you know, revamp their offer and attract tenants?
Well, certainly councils have been, you know, a very interesting investor in particular. You know, they've been investors on patch and they've been investors off patch. And in fact, last year, I think we estimated that half a billion pounds, £500 million collectively by councils has been invested. And it will be interesting to see sort of how that dynamic moves going forward with the public loan board criteria sort of changing a little bit. I think, in terms of our top picks, Watford we find particularly attractive, incredibly low vacancy, terrific connections back into London, which are incredibly important. Some very interesting occupier demand at the moment looking at Watford. And, again, three or four really important criteria and rental growth, which is obviously essential, particularly for spec development to occur. So we're excited by Watford. I'm excited by Oxford and Cambridge. I think a lot of people are. Oxford in particular has been very undersupplied. Cambridge rather better supplied, but certainly has got a fantastic growth story still, I think, to come. Rents are moving into the early 40s now. I still think there's a head on that. I don't think that's a ceiling at all. And then, of course, there is the road infrastructure link that is being proposed between Oxford and Cambridge. And I think it could be interesting to see if that will then open up a corridor between those two in certain centres, depending on the route that it follows, which again, you know, will be quite important. But principally, a lot of this is linked to infrastructure. So Crossrail is within 12 months of opening, properly opening, you know, and that is pulling in occupiers. It's really, really it's a massive, I say vacuum, but it's sucking in loads of occupiers. And we're seeing business, for the first time that I can recall, changing sub-market. So it's already been seen. Ericsson have gone from Guildford to Reading. That's geographically a huge, it's a big geographical move. They're going to retain, I gather, a very small team in the Guildford market because certain people have said they won't move. And there are two or three other occupiers who are looking at what could be quite seismic sort of relocations. But Novartis has been talked about. They're halfway down the M3. They might move into West London. You know, pretty game changing for the business, but also for the staff that currently work in the sort of Hampshire M3 corridor market. Mondelez, who came out of Cadbury, you know, they're looking at the moment at getting down onto the Elizabeth line. So Crossrail is really beginning to have an effect and have a real impact.
That's great. Thank you very much.